Thank you guys for choosing Weekly Politics as your podcast today. I know for a fact you know today is Saturday, not for you guys, not Wednesday, which is usually when I come out with episodes. I'll just quickly say I'm busy. This week was more of a busy week than anything. I had a lot of projects due. It's towards the end of the school year. A lot of things to do, a lot of things on my mind. So I really just didn't have time to set aside 2 hours to make a podcast, but here I am, I can do it now. So come out with this tomorrow, which is Saturday for you guys, Friday for me today. And yeah, let's get into it. Monday, I talked about immigration and what my views on immigration were as a political theory, right? And it's really interesting. Everything I said on there is absolutely 100% what I believe. Obviously, there's a lot to it, though. There's a lot of immigration policies that affect more than just politics. Say you have, obviously, if you have one specific political group that only wants people to come into the country without boundaries, obviously those immigrants are going to come in and support those people within the first generation, and then as more generations are born, they'll start supporting half and half. It's kind of like a half-life. It works kind of like that. That's pretty obvious. That's just common sense political stuff. But then there's also some economic things. So let's say, hypothetically speaking, let's say America were to suddenly stop growing, and forever, for the rest of all time, we are always at a population of 334 million people. There's a limit to what our economy can reach. There's a limit to everything, actually. So let's put it in this way. So I'm going to talk about the economy, because I don't like talking about military when it comes to immigration, because it gets really confusing, and then you have to include refugees, and then you have to, then basically all of your numbers that you predict are almost always going to be under predicted, because there's always some more refugees thrown in there and always more immigrants thrown in there, so it's impossible to predict. So I'm just going to use the economy side of it, and we'll just talk about that today. So when you have immigrants coming into a place, say they're from Mexico coming to the United States of America, and all of a sudden they stop, and America's population freezes, and it stays at 334 million people, what you're going to see is the economy, depending on who's president, it may continue to grow, but after a short period of time, it will stop. There's an efficiency limit. So let's say we have all of the laws we currently have right now, all of the economic laws, all of these taxes, all of these regulations, and we just keep them as they are, don't get rid of any, and we don't make any new ones. What's going to happen is, if our economy already is slowing down, and we didn't even stop growing yet, and that's mainly because Biden's economic policies are terrible, but we can get into that a whole nother day, say next week, because he announced he's running for president again. The entire point I'm trying to make here is, say we have, if we don't have enough immigrants, if we're not growing as a country, the economy will follow. The economy has to follow. The economy is linked directly to the people in this country. And you might be thinking, well, no, I mean, technology goes up, your economy goes up, and it's just going to keep going like that forever and ever and ever and ever. Not really. Technology doesn't have an endless limit. There's always a limit to everything. Think about it this way. Innovation in the early 1800s and 1900s wasn't about computer chips and technology. Innovation back then was about making a plow that can plow more than one row, or making an automated plow that has an engine in it so you can drive it, like a combine. Today, it's all about computers and innovation online. Computer chips, phones, actual computers, gaming, all of that stuff, AI, all of this stuff. That is what our economy is being innovated by today. There is a limit to that, even. There's a limit to the internet. There's a limit to everything. The only way we can keep this growing is by either physically expanding our borders to encompass other nations, which I don't like. I don't like that at all, which means taking over other nations to incorporate them into the American economy. I don't like that idea whatsoever. That's called imperialism. I am not an imperialist, although I did give an episode defending American imperialism. But go check that out if you're confused on how I cannot be an imperialist while also supporting 1980s American imperialism. I like that episode. I also made it, so of course I like it, but you get the point. That's either that way, or you can actually grow legally as a country, which is the people in your country have kids, right? They have a birth rate of, say, it's 1.6, 1.7-ish. That's enough to sustain the country, but then you have a birth rate of 2.0. That's enough to grow the country. The only Western nation being, meaning a nation that has very laissez-faire economic policies, so there's a lot of businesses there, a lot of people are rich there, So say the United States would be a Western country, France would be Western, England, or sorry, the United Kingdom would be Western, Israel would be Western. The only Western country in the world that has enough children to replace its has enough children for replacement level is Israel. And that is because it's an extremely religious country. The more religious the country is, the more kids you're going to have. It's hard to explain. Oh, okay, it's not hard to explain why. Let me just put it this way. Most religious people find a the purpose. I'm sorry, I can't speak English today. They find a purpose in raising a family. So let's say you have a wife, you get married, then you grow up, say a year later you have children, then you have kids again. It's they find a purpose in that. So Israel, obviously an extremely religious country, they have a lot of kids, so then you're going to see a very large amount. I think the replacement level is 2.21. So they have enough kids for replacement. They're growing as a country, but then there's also immigration, and they're growing because of that too. So Israel is a fast-growing country, economically and population-wise. The United States, on the other hand, if we were to cease all immigration, we'd barely even grow. I think last year was the last, last year would be the first year in a long time that we actually had enough kids for replacement level, and that was 1.7, so barely even. And then there would be early 2000s, we hadn't over 2.0, so we were growing at that point. The entire point of all of this is what I'm trying to say is when you have an economy and it stops growing physically, not enough people, it's going to stop growing economically speaking. The dollar amounts will eventually slow. And the only reason why the United States and many other Western countries are still growing economically is because we don't have our economy strictly within our borders. We have our economy everywhere. We are what's considered a world standardized economy. So if you have China on the other side of the world, they can take part in our economy. They can buy our products even though they're on the other side of the world. France can do the same thing. Brazil can do the same thing. Argentina can do the same thing. And we can do the same thing to them. We can buy their products. We can buy Chinese products. We can buy French products. We can buy Argentinian products. That's really just how all this economy stuff works. But there's a limit to that. When you have a country that stops growing, eventually, all of the countries you trade with, most of the countries we trade with are Western, and most of them are no longer growing. Once none of our trade partners, including us, stop growing, our economy becomes limited. The only reason why it can still possibly grow is because you have inefficiencies within the economy. So let's say you say, no, we can't actually have gas products because I don't like the environment. That's an inefficiency. Gas products, if you treat them in a laissez-faire type of way, meaning you have very loose regulations on gas cars, gas stoves, all those other types of products, what you're going to see is the economy will shoot up. Not because it has a more unlimited potential, but because you loosened up the inefficiency, you got rid of the inefficiency. Now it's going to go up to that point until there's another blockade. And it's going to stay there until that blockade is gotten rid of. And eventually you'll get to the point where the only blockade left is population. And the only way to get rid of that is by growing your country. That's essentially how it goes. So let's talk about China. China has a population of around 1.4 billion. India also has a population of around 1.4 billion. China is no longer growing. India is growing. China has a bigger economy. India has the fifth largest economy in the world. They recently surpassed the United Kingdom. All of this leads to something interesting. So I just told you that the larger the country and the faster you're growing, the more potential your economy holds. Well, China is very, very weak right now. I mean, let's put it this way. China's growing their military. Their economy is still growing, but their population is shrinking. In fact, they lost over 1 million people last year. Who knows how many they'll lose this year? Because no one is having kids in their country and there's not enough people immigrating to their country. So they're actually losing a ton of people every single year now, starting from last year through who knows how long it'll last. That is not good for them. The whole reason why they're losing people is more of a them problem because they had these laws back then that said you can only have one kid, and then they changed it to two kids. And I think they might have even gotten rid of that one now. The entire point of this, though, is that it doesn't matter how many kid policies you have in place, the people there can't afford to have those kids anymore. And that's their excuse anyway. They actually can, but their excuse is that they cannot because they're so used to the luxuries of having one kid or having only two kids, mostly only one kid though, and then being able to buy all these other things that they want, not need, that they want. And so they don't want to get rid of those things that they want in order to have more kids and have a long-term future. They don't want that. That's not what they want. Everything is about what they want and not what they need. That's China's idea. So their economy is growing quickly because they're opening it up more and more to the world. They're selling their products to the world. They're not buying other products from the world, but they're selling their products to the world. So if you're in China, it's hard to buy an American product. But if you're in America, you can buy a Chinese product anywhere. You can go to an Apple store. I didn't know if you knew this, but actually, many of the main parts of an Apple iPhone are produced in Vietnam. But there's also like the chip manufacturing produced in China. Many parts on a Ford or a Chevy are produced in China. The main manufacturing at the base of the car is produced in America. But the smaller things like a chip or wires, whatever, they're all produced in China. The most American-made car in the world is actually a Tesla. Even though they do have factories in China, they're selling those cars throughout Asia and just recently to Canada, but not in the United States. Yeah, that's how that works, I guess. China's economy is strong, but they have an enormous inefficiency, and the enormous inefficiency is their population. So their population's capped off and it's shrinking, which means their inefficiency is growing enormously, very significantly. So the more this shrinks for them, the more the larger the inefficiency is going to get. So let's say once they which they have now, they've opened up their economy to the world, their GDPC is growing, their GDP is growing like crazy. They're still a poor country, but it's growing. It's getting richer, but still poor. It's about on Mexico's level right now and Turkey's level right now. Both those countries are also poor. But China, because of their inefficiency, I would give them 10 years. 10 years before they have no more, they can no longer grow. And this is all speculative, right? 10 years. In 10 years, if nothing changes between now and the 10 years, they will stop growing. But it is very likely something will change. For an example, there's a very high probability of a world financial crisis coming soon. Whether it's the collapse of the dollar, it doesn't matter. By the way, the collapse of the dollar will affect China because China uses the dollar to buy goods from other countries. Although Argentina and Brazil, I believe, just started using Chinese dollar, what do they call them? Yuans. Chinese yuans when buying Chinese products. They still use the American dollar when buying any other world product. So all of that adds up to China is going to fall sometime. And they also are making more strict rules and laws, regulations on their businesses. So you can't do this, you can't do that, you have to pay more taxes. And those are also inefficiencies. When you add in more inefficiencies on top of the massive inefficiency of population, you get a massive decline. So I'd give them, if they continue with the adding more inefficiency to the massive inefficiency that they already have, I would give them about 5 years. 5 years before they stop growing economically. I could be wrong. It's very possible I'm wrong. Experts have been wrong about this time and time again. I could be wrong, but I would give them 5 to 10 years. Now let's go to India. India is way different. They have a birth rate of around four. A birth rate of four, which means they're growing extremely quickly, and they already have a population of 1.4 billion. The only reason their economy is not growing super quickly is because it's not open to the world. They have very socialistic standards when it comes to how to run a business. You have super high taxes, you have super high regulations, you have all of these things. And sometimes those are good, but a lot of times those are bad. Super high regulations? Okay, sure, no child labor. I like that. No child labor. But they do have child labor. They don't have the regulations in the right spot. They have child labor, but they have high taxes. They have high taxes, they have high emission standards. That doesn't make any sense for India. They're very socialistic. Maybe focus your regulations on stopping child labor. Focus your regulations on stopping a lot of the crime, the telemarketing. Focus your what do you call them? Regulations on improving, instead of improving the government and making the government the head of the economy, focus it on the people. Make the people the head of the economy, and India's economy will boom. That is exactly what happened to America's economy. It boomed. South Korea's economy, it boomed. Japan's economy, it boomed. All of these massive major economies in the world boomed because of deregulation, not regulation. India, they are in an amazing spot. The world is looking for a new manufacturer. The world is looking for someone who is not communist that can manufacture their goods and grow economically and grow with the population without inefficiencies. India can take up that spot. They can. Have they? Sort of. They're starting to lower regulations. They're starting to grow a little bit. It's a little bit, piece by piece. They're removing inefficiencies bit one bit at a time. Which is why they recently overtook the United Kingdom as the fifth largest economy, even though the United Kingdom is more free than India. And that's, again, the more people you have, the bigger your economy looks. So China only looks like it has a big economy because they have a lot of people. India looks like they have a big economy because they have a lot of people. In reality, their GDPC is what matters the most, and it's actually pretty low. In fact, India's is around 2,000, China's is around 10,000. All that goes into saying they're both poor. India is significantly poorer, but it's growing. It's getting there. In fact, the rich in India can live off $254,000 for the rest of their life if they get that money when they're 20. They can live off $254,000. Impressive. In America, you can live off $254,000 for the next 5 years. $254,000 doesn't get you very far in America. In India, it gets you really far because everything is super cheap and all the standards are super low. So something that's super expensive in India, say, if you try to buy an iPhone, for example, in India, it might be super, super expensive. But that's not considered their luxury for them. You want to get on a luxury flight or luxury train in India, it's going to be way cheaper than it is in America. And that's not because their standards are not the same. A luxury train in India is a normal train in the United States. A first class flight in India is a lower class flight in the United States. That's really why it's cheaper in India. It's not because, oh, they have some magic stuff and they just make it cheaper. It's actually just because they have lower standards. And so, yeah, their super fancy suits that cost probably a lot of money are normal suits that you wear almost every day if you're a businessman in the United States. So really, their standards are just way lower. That's why it's way cheaper there. It's not actually cheaper, just lower standards. Think of it that way. But India has a lot of potential. The United States also has an enormous amount of potential. If we revive religious values in the United States, just by the way, if you didn't know this, around 50-ish percent of people in the United States proclaim to be Christian, which means either Protestant or Catholic. It was way higher in the early 2000s. In the early 2000s, it was almost 70 or 80%. And even higher in the 1800s, 1980s. Basically, America used to be this extremely religious country, and only recently did it fall enormously. The rise of secularism is what I want to call it. And that's because of a couple things. First of all, if you look at a political graph, and on this political graph, the majority of Republicans are religious, the majority of Democrats are not. What does this tell you? Okay, so Democrats have always had more registered members. There are more registered Democrats in the United States than there are registered Republicans in the United States. That's a fact. It's been true for a very long time. I don't know if it's ever been the opposite way, ever. Maybe in the Civil War era, maybe, but it's as since then, as far as I know, it's always been this way. So let's look at it that way. Okay, what do we see now? We see an extreme leftist regime. So a lot of people saying, well, yeah, sure, you might be a man, but that's just how you think of yourself. A lot of this, well, what do you think of yourself type of stuff. That's what I think is destroying the religious values in America today. A lot of that. So put it this way. When you're in a religious, any religion, whether it's Muslim, Christian, Judaism, Judaism, is that how you say it? We're going to say Judaism. It doesn't matter what religion you're in. When you're in a religion, following this religion, and you start following it loosely, more and more loosely, and you justify your more and more loosely values with, say, the Torah or the Bible or the Quran. Say, I'm a Christian, and I decide, you know what? What's a good example? And I decide gay marriage is okay. And then I go, okay, why do I think that? And I'll be like, well, I mean, Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. So, I mean, that must mean it's okay. That doesn't mean it's okay, first of all. That makes no sense. That's completely out of context. Yes, love your neighbor as yourself, but that doesn't mean you have to support every single tiny little thing they do. It doesn't mean that at all. But okay, sure. Let's say they say that. Okay, that'd be step number one, and then they go towards basically they're replacing religious values with political values. So the step one would be say gay marriage is okay. Okay, you can believe that. I mean, it doesn't ruin the country yet. And then they go to, well, maybe transgenderism could be okay at sometimes, like maybe very rare cases we could just have transgender surgeries and other people could be like, okay, I don't agree with that, but I can't stop you. So then that comes the thing. And basically you're slowly removing yourself from religion and pretending your political affiliation is your religion. And that's what we see. That's why it looks like this massive drop from 80% to 50%. It's not because there actually was a massive drop super quickly. This drop happened a long time ago. These people thought they were religious when they weren't. And then the massive drop happens when they start no longer claiming to be religious. So after a while, you have this extreme political view, and then you're like, you know what? Nah, secularism? I love atheism. I'm not a Christian anymore. And then that's what happens. So now the massive drop was never a massive drop. It's been happening for ages. You just didn't see it. And now it's here. Now here we are. Reviving religious values and injecting it into the political system will actually revive the religious system. That is why Republicans are mostly religious. Most of our values come from religion, whether it's Muslim, Christian, Judaism. Ask any religious Christian. Any Christian who follows a religion, and he will tell you all of his values come from the Bible. And I know I said this is true with liberal Christianity too, or any liberal religion in general. They all claim it's coming from their biblical or their standardized book, whether it's the Bible or the Torah, the Quran, it doesn't matter. They all claim it's coming from their religion. In reality, it isn't. And the way you can test this is, are they making excuses for a political agenda? So a political agenda would be, look at the left, Democrats. They loved gay marriage, right? They did. That would be their political agenda. Their political agenda was to make gay marriage legal throughout the United States, which, okay, technically you cannot make it illegal, technically speaking. So, I mean, okay. I guess I'm okay with that. Sure, whatever. And then there's the that's a political agenda, right? And now liberal Christianity comes around and says, you know what, gay marriage is actually okay. They started saying this after the political agenda started saying this. They're changing because the political agenda changed, which means they are tied to a political agenda, not to the Bible. That's the test you can simply do. My standards and beliefs have changed over time, but I'm not realigning them for a political agenda. I'm trying to realign them and keep them aligned to the Bible. So I will change them as I keep reading the Bible and learn more about the Bible. Not as the Republicans change or as this and this and that. If it was as the Republicans change, I would love Trump, man. If I was focused only on Republicanism, it would be like, oh man, Trump every day. I'm just gonna watch Trump and vote for Trump. But I don't. I like DeSantis. DeSantis is a Catholic. I'm not a Catholic, but it's something, right? It's better than the supposed Catholic we have in office right now, who's definitely not religious at all. I like DeSantis for that reason. So you're starting to understand this, right? Population. I went off hook a little bit there and talked a lot about politics because it's super interesting. But population has a major part of everything, whether it comes to politics, religion, or economics. Population is everything. The more people you have, the more possibilities you have, but also the more danger you have. I just saw an interesting statistic, by the way. Apparently, 1 in 4 high school students no longer consider themselves straight. Which is 25%. Oof. Most of that is in California, Washington, Oregon, Maine, all those more blue coastal states. Colorado, although Colorado's not coastal, but there's a lot of that in there too as well. There isn't as much as in, say, Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota, Florida, Texas, Oklahoma. Definitely not Oklahoma, Tennessee a little bit, but you get the point. Yeah. So yeah. All this population stuff. It does get really interesting. I can go deeper into it next week. I would say, let's look at it this way, okay? I was just talking about how 25% of high school students consider themselves no longer straight. There's a statistic I also saw. It's a really interesting statistic. It says a lot. And I think, okay, before I go on with the statistic, let's say this. There are people who are born gay. There's also people who are born lesbian. There's that. I'm fine with that. I don't care if you're born gay, whatever. You were born that way. You can't help it. Okay. That means you're gay attracted. This means you're attracted to men or you're attracted to women. Put it that way. The thing I'm against is actually being in a relationship. So say you're gay and then you act on that impulse and you get within another man. So get within another man. I'm sorry that came out wrong. And you get in a relationship with another man, same as if you're a woman. That is what I'm against. That's what I believe is the sin, not being born that way. Now that we've got that done, there's a statistic that says 50% of bisexual people have only been in a straight relationship. The question then comes to mind, are they actually bisexual? So like I said, there are people who are born this way, but there are also plenty and tons of people who are not born this way, but yet are in these types of relationships or claim to be this type of thing because the area where they are is considered cool. For example, if you're in California and you consider yourself gay, you get social points, or you consider yourself lesbian or trans, you get social points for doing that in high school. I mean, I have a cousin who lives there, so I do sort of know what's going on there in high school. But okay, then we can go to say Colorado is probably extremely similar. Oregon, Washington, all of these places, and even extremely liberal areas like Chicago or New York City, especially those areas, you see social points. If you're gay, social points. You're lesbian, social points. Trans, social points. You get social points for that stuff with your friend group, and your friend group is what matters to you most. So yes, the outside world you might think is against you, but you don't care about them. I don't care about the outside world. What most high school kids care about is their friend group. They care about being popular within their immediate group, their immediate vicinity. And the immediate vicinity is very supportive of that. In fact, encourages that. So when you have that, yes, you're going to see a massive inflation of this type of thing, of these type of things. A lot of people saying they're gay when they are not. People saying they're lesbian when they are not. People saying they're trans when they are not. People saying they have gender dysphoria when they definitely do not. People pretending they have these mental disorders when they do not. And it is offensive. It's faking who you are. The liberals talk about being who you really are. They're saying it in a very sinister way. I'm saying it in a good way. Be who you really are. Do not care what your friend group says. Do not care what the outside world is. Actually, be who you actually are. The outside world and the friend group has no control over you. They shouldn't. Only God should. Put it that way. That is today's episode. And yeah, sorry it's late, but I was busy. I can't always do everything, unfortunately. I wish I could. I was told, my mom told me that she can multitask. I'm like, no, there's no way you can multitask, man. It's not possible. Non-existent. But yeah, nice. So, see y'all later, hopefully Monday. Adios.